The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Okay, so I just came out from a session about brown bloggers. And as I'm walking out, there's this beautiful blonde, you know, with the green eyes and the hellacious smile coming behind me. And I'm like, oh, I know who that is. That's Hallie Suit. Hallie, how come you were in the brown blogger session?
There's lots of reasons. Okay, so let's start with, actually, back in chilly February, I'm at Harvard at a conference, and people are talking about links, and I make a loud noise about the fact that it seems to me many men do not link to women, but also don't link to any bloggers of color. So that actually started the conference, Blog Her, because Lisa Stone was there, and we said, it's gotten out of hand, we have to do something. And she, let me give her all the credit, she did all the organizing, all the putting it together. I used to organize conferences at Harvard, and I'm burned out, I think. So I said, Lisa, I'll be happy to be there, and I'll be happy to speak, but I don't count on me for doing anything, you know, at all. And she did everything, together with Eliza Kamahort and a great group of women. And anyway, so that was probably, start there, which is because I threw down that challenge of asking A-list bloggers to mention women, promote women, and link to them on their sites, and also bloggers of color. I started doing it. I started meeting and finding out more about different bloggers of color. So that was interesting to me just right off. And then also very fascinating to see who picked up the challenge, right? And one in particular was Jay Rosen, who writes Press Think, and he's here at Blog Her, which is great, but he was one of the earliest people to mention it, and then later there was a piece in Newsweek about it, and so that's one place that you can start. Why I'm following you around in the Bloggers of Color event today at the particular breakout session. The other is my son. I was telling you a bit about this, which is I'll often talk to guys and they're kind of chatting with me or flirting with me, and they might tell a kind of off-color joke, you might call it. Sometimes they'll just tell a joke about Chinese or Asians, and they don't know because I'm such a white girl. They wouldn't even imagine. In fact, my son is half Chinese and half white. And even beyond that, I'm not the girl to tell a racist joke to. I'm not big on that. But so often that'll happen, that they'll tell me some anti-Asian thing and think it's funny. And I don't find it ever funny because my son, even at now only 10, faces racism often, and I see things. Well, he'll come home from school, and the pure Chinese kids are giving him a hard time, or the pure white kids are giving him a hard time that he's too dark, or, you know, he's not white enough, or he's too whatever. And so I have already met it on many levels. And beyond that, I love what a lot of the bloggers of color are writing about. It's an experience I want to know about. It's an easy way for me to find out about what their lives are like. And I would say if it's a woman of color writing, there's a lot I have in common with her as a woman. And I want to know what they're thinking and doing. And blogging is the perfect platform to write about your experience. Nobody has to grant you permission. You don't have to ask for an editor to say this is a good subject or a subject that matters, or we value what you're saying. Just press the button, publish, and you have decided it matters what you're saying. And I think that's why often for so many years in mainstream media, those stories aren't coming out. They're considered not important. And if you're a white guy in New Jersey who runs a newspaper or whatever, okay, you don't think it's important, but I do. I want to read that stuff, and that's another reason that I argue that we should be brave and write everything we can about our experience. It's unique. We need to tell everybody how it feels to be a blogger of color or a woman blogger or a blogger with a son that is mixed race, for instance. So.
And that's awesome that you bring it up, because I'm of mixed race myself, and the same, half white and half Asian. And I don't really address it. I don't address it in my blog. I don't take the time. It's a lot of responsibility to do that. And I'm actually still coming to terms with it because I was raised by my mother, mainly, who is white, like yourself. And I had the same problems in school as your son. But I tend to be what I see. Do you know that? So even though he can't see himself, he's looking out of his eyes. He is like you. He thinks of himself more like you than relating with the Asian person. And so that's a whole other issue. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. It makes me more conscious that maybe I should be writing about these kind of things, because there will be little boys like yours that are going to grow up and need to hear about what my viewpoints are and how I've grown past it. And maybe that will help him.
I would like to mention, too, something that I see as it's a very strange kind of racism. I don't know if you'd call it racism, that there's something, often people will say how beautiful a mix of white and Asian is, as if that's somehow sort of a, you know, on the glass menagerie, you sit up on a shelf as some beautiful thing, and that is there something going on there where that's not as good as pure Asian? I mean, what is that about? And there, it's often said about women that often it just seems to be true, like with you, that you're beautiful. And so often a mix of those races is beautiful, but it's as if they've created a whole new category of science, a very strange phenomena, that's somehow acceptable because you're beautiful. It's giving a message that as long as the mix of races came out good, like it was a chemistry experiment, hello, excuse me, it's a person we're talking about, that then you're okay. But this is, I mean, now we want to talk about America, and if you're beautiful, you're okay. And if you're a woman and beautiful, you're okay. But otherwise, no need to apply for whatever. This gets me a little crazy. And people often will say, my son is quite handsome. And they will say, oh, you should have made, it's a factory? What's going on? That I should have made a little girl and white and Chinese combo girl? It's very odd. So I think that the problems that a mixed race... Also, I think you probably experienced... Do you think that the way people talk about an African-American and white mixed child is positive? I think often not.
Wow, awesome that you asked that. My cousin is half white and half black, and she does have problems. She has a different set of problems. Of course, we're from the South, so there's a whole other mix going on there. But when we're together, our skin is the same color. And she has lighter hair than I do. She's more blonde, and I'm more dark brown. But her hair is a different texture. And because of that, you're right. I see that. I see that they treat her differently. And it just kills me. Why is that? I'm sure in the South it's amplified by 100. But I wonder, why is that?
If you want to think about racism, you know, in its most pure sense, it's hatred, that an assumption of hatred about a certain type of person, a stereotype. Before you make any real judgment, you're prejudging someone. It's prejudice, right? And what, we'll use the word mulatto, okay? Is it a positive word? No, I don't think so. It's often used in a very derogatory manner, though it's a neutral word, but it has picked up a lot of baggage. And I think that there is an assumption for a person that's part black and part white, that's negative. It has the black outweighs the white part. Interestingly, I find, and I've talked with my ex-husband a lot about this as a Chinese man, there are assumptions about Asians that are very racist. They may seem positive, like they're good at technology and they're geeky and smart. But tell me about the stereotype of basically that Asian men are not sexy. That's a big media prejudice, right? And that equally, what? That an African-American man is somehow very... There's a great sexual undertone in the stereotype. So how is it that those things get determined? And back to your question about why is an Asian white combo beautiful, but an African-American white combo not so beautiful? It's about racism. And I do think... Even underneath, I think Asians have been given a sense of, like, they cooperate with the society. the dominant white society, they can stay at the party. They're okay. And there are a lot of issues with Asian women of somehow they're submissive. They're physically small in stature, so they're therefore there's a sense they can be controlled or they can be submissive that is terrible. Don't get me started. Do you think that, I mean, of course you can, we know there's nothing really more rowdy than an Asian girl, right? Watch out. But you know, it that is the crazy assumption. And I think that's the racism that's behind the mix. It carries the prejudice of one side, one race or another.
And as a beautiful blonde, blue-eyed, green-eyed girl, what are the things that you come up against? What are the stereotypes that people do to you?
Well, needless to say, why be a blonde if you can't be an idiot? Can I tell my blonde joke?
Tell it.
It's because, you know, it's become like a stealth mode for me. Because people think you're stupid, you can actually disarm them. Notice I said people. I won't say who thinks blondes are stupid. Could it be men? No, I didn't say that. Okay, so this blonde goes into, it's like an electronics store, and she wants to buy, I never tell it right because I can't stand blonde jokes, but she wants to buy, oh no, maybe because I'm so dumb because I'm a blonde, that's why. Okay, so she goes into an electronics store and she wants to buy, a TV, and she goes up to the guy and she says, I want a good deal on this TV. You know, can you give me a deal on this TV? And he's like, I'm sorry, we can't sell to blondes. And she's like real perplexed. So she leaves, and then she comes back like a month later, and, I already mixed up the joke. I don't even remember. No. And then she asks again, and she's got like a hat on. She's trying to hide some of her blonde or whatever. And he says, I'm sorry, we can't sell the blondes. She's covered her hair mostly. She's like, how do you know I'm a blonde? And then finally, she comes in somehow completely with a wig on and everything and says, I want to buy this TV. He's like, we won't sell the blondes. And she says, how do you know I'm a blonde? And he's like, because this is a microwave. It's so horrible. I'm sorry. But anyway, do I meet racism and do I get discriminated against? As a woman, yeah. I mean, in some funny way, obviously being female, blonde, white, that's a combination where I have a lot of advantages over some other people. But it doesn't mean that I don't meet... And I tease about the men think I'm stupid or people think blondes are stupid. But on the other hand, I think we do run into racism and we do run into prejudices about assumptions people make about me that I won't know. I've sat in so many technology conferences where some nice gentleman will sit next to me and explain something to me because I'm so dumb. I couldn't know anything about RSS, right? It's like, okay, like I know the people who invented it. Hello, I don't need you explaining anything. What do? You just talk to them like they're an idiot. No, you go, oh, thanks. Great. Fascinating. I'm so glad you explained it finally. But so do we run into stuff? We run into stuff, but nothing like the experience that some people deal with, that people of race and bloggers of color. And it was interesting in the session to hear what they go through and even the concern of how frightening it is sometimes for them just to let forth and tell the truth and talk about their real experience that they are nervous sometimes to show how angry they are about how they're poorly treated, and they need to, I think, so.
And I wonder, how do you feel when they start attacking more the white side of our culture? See, that's hard for me, and the reason why, let me go ahead and set that up. The reason why I ask that is because being mixed myself, half white and half Asian, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to identify with only one because I've always been both. And I love both parents equally. And so when one side is attacked either way, I get upset and I feel that they're being exclusive instead of inclusive. So how does that make you feel? And especially as a mother.
Yeah, it's tricky and I don't know. I think that it's as you grow older and you go through work situations and you have a family and you live through so much of your life and you see that there are enormous advantages to being white. It's no question in America. So you can't get away from that. On the other hand, if someone's going to talk about the hierarchy of America and how all white people have great advantage, women don't have great advantage. White men do. And I actually think men of color have, in some situations, more advantage than women. So do you think in technology, men of color, Indian men, Asian men, certain other men you can think of have more advantage than and are taken more seriously than women? I think so.
Yes, I can agree with that. So tell me, since BloggerCon has come to fruition, and this was all on an idea many, many moons ago, right? Is it what you thought it would be? Did it come and grow into something that you thought it would be, or is it totally different? And what are you going to be going away with?
It's much better than I thought it would be because I don't like anything that's just like one, one note melody of we're women and we want it. You know, it can't, that emphasis and that kind of anything coming from that place is just, it's too thin. You know, you would hope it's deeper. And what I was knocked out by, and right from the beginning this morning, was that the knowledge in the room of these people is so considerable. And I'm sitting there. I was one of the keynote speakers, essentially. And I'm listening to the other people in the room who are so knowledgeable. And Lisa Stone's ability to release that knowledge and have everybody share it in the room was fabulous. And I can't think of a lot of conferences I've been to. I'm sure Gnomedex is an exception, which I was unable to attend this year. But anyway, I have often in a situation where there's a few men up front, they're the only ones that talk. People, when it's Q&A, are trying to either shoot them down or they're trying to shoot down the people who ask the questions. It's not a collaborative environment. And so what instantly hit me from the morning was that we need about 3 or 4 days, not one. And what enormous, literally very specific things I was learning from each person talking about ideas. And even it wasn't like Q&A. Q&A is so often, I'm so smart and I'm going to show off how smart I am. And the person is going on and on and on and talking to steal the floor. Or there's this competitive thing going on, and that none of that was going on here. It was amazing. And what was going on was realizing what an unbelievably untapped network we're witnessing. It was amazing. So that was, I take that away, which is we're going to have to do this again, and I think we definitely have to do it with more than one day because just the activity of networking outside of the room with this incredible audience. I hate the word audience. It's not an audience. It's like this collaborative group of, think tank, brain think. It's incredible, these women. So we've got to leverage that even more so in the next go around. And I don't think it should be annual. I think there's a real case to be made for it kind of being quarterly in different cities on different coasts, once every quarter, every season. It's a killer group, wasn't it?
It's interesting that you say that. We've been tossing that idea around with Gnomedex, and we missed you. We really wanted you there this year. We wanted you on a panel. We wanted you to speak, and I know you couldn't make it. So I'm going to put you on the line here, and hopefully next year you'll be able to come. But, yeah, the quarterly idea is awesome. I think that it could easily be done, and the different cities would include different people. So that would be awesome. We need to definitely look into that. Okay, and the last most important question of all. Ready? Fruit Loops or Corn Flakes?
Oh, come on. You have to ask me? Fruit Loops.
I think mainly I just wanted to see you say it and grin.
That's what I'm saying. Come on.
Thank you so much, Allie.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm sitting here with Anna. Is it Mutineer?
Yep. Mutineer, because cpmutiny.com is what I'm representing here, and so we call ourselves Mutineers.
So I went up to get a cookie, and Anna came by, and she said, thank you for standing up and saying something in the Brown Bloggers meetup, because someone had mentioned, I don't know her name, maybe Anna can fill me in here, that it was kind of exclusive because it was for Black and Latino bloggers. And so she just stood up and said, basically, I'm Asian, Southeast Asian, and I feel like, you know, excluded. And so what are your thoughts on that?
It was so disheartening to see the blog her agenda. And I don't want to knock this conference because it is amazing. I was blogging it live and I wrote a really brief post and I said, I'm so blissed out here. But to if we're going to, you know, claim the space for our own and if we're going to do things right from the get-go, because this is all kind of emerging, it's really disheartening for a conference this phenomenal to on their agenda put brown bloggers, blah, 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 and then write African-American and Latino. And wow, was it, you know, not even considered that you should be enlarging that conception of what brown is? Because brown is a lot more than people who might speak several different types of Spanish or people who trace their ancestry to Africa. And especially as a South Asian who writes for CP Mutiny, where our preferred way of sort of self-identification is brown, brown, brown. In fact, when I introduced the blog, I've introduced it over and over again today. I was a panelist, and I said, I write for CP Mutiny, and it's a group blog, and we write about all things brown. So I've been walking around with claiming this, and to go to the ultimate part of this for this day, where you're talking about a brown bloggers panel, and to walk in and just be like, so this is not for me. It was amazing. And to their credit, the woman who was moderating apologized profusely. And I didn't know if we should even be holding her responsible because I didn't know who wrote the agenda. So I don't want to in any way, you know, blame people when I don't know who the person was behind this. But I just think it's so important. And I think that if you don't enlarge that definition of what brown is, we're just going to start this entire revolution, this communications revolution, very problematically. So it's not fair. I mean, and afterwards, there was like a 25-minute conversation between people who were African-American, the woman who initially stood up and said what she did. Her name is Che. She's also South Asian. She's a blogger. She's a new blogger. And she and I, at the same time, had the same epiphany. We looked at it and we said, what about us? So she and I and two African-American bloggers were going back and forth and talking about, like, colorism in our communities and self-hatred and all of these things. And we just kept nodding at each other and going, I know, exactly. Well, what about this? What about that? And look at these connections. And to me, it just emphasized how nonsensical it was to not have brown include us when it was so obvious that we should have been there on so many levels. You know, hopefully that's been resolved. Hopefully next year they will be conscious of that and they will be more inclusive and they will not make people feel abandoned as Che felt. I didn't feel abandoned per se, but I definitely felt slighted. I felt a little bit offended. I felt invisible, you know, to be in a brown bloggers panel or a discussion and not be recognized as one of them. So I think that's really, really huge.
Yes, I can totally relate. When she said it, I did. I shouted out, me too. And it was because when I read it, I definitely felt excluded. But I was going to go beyond that and go inside the session to see what they're talking about, because it is part of what's going on with me. I am part of the brown community. So it was interesting to hear the responses. I also believe that she handled it very well. And she just said basically that I don't think that they really thought of it. To be honest, I just don't think it was thought of. And so, yeah, I'd love to get together with them later and see how we can grow this and maybe continue this conversation online through our blogs. And I'll definitely look forward to looking at Mutiny.
CP Mutiny.
Oh, it's Sepia. Right, it's www.sepiamutiny.com.
Brown Uprising, Brown Mutiny. So, again, it's just coming from that perspective. Like, I'm the one who named our blog. I didn't come up with it, but when we were debating all these names and I came up with this is a pun on the Sepoy Mutiny, the first Indian war for independence against the British in 1857, and I said sepia is a color brown and that's what we are. And so, you know, it gets tossed around our side a lot in comments, like, well, let's have our brown uprising. And so it's so much a part of my life as a blogger. So it was really, really, like, I'd say the most emotional part of my day to be in that session where you stood up and said me too, and I was like clapping like silently, and I'm like amen, because I could tell that you were also, you know, Asian, and I was like, we deserve to have a place at this table. You know?
And how did you feel? Did you feel quiet that you couldn't stand up and say what you had to say? Or did you just, were you angry or were you upset?
I was a little bit of all of those things, but I'll tell you the reason why I was quiet, which is very anomalous for me, is because I'm also conscious of not wanting to dominate the conversation. And I've watched Che all day, and she hasn't really contributed to any of the discussions. And when she was so fired up, I wanted to just take a step back and let her speak for me, because I knew she would. And I knew she understood exactly. We had the exact same reaction, the exact same sort of, oh no, being taken aback. So, but I felt so many different things. That's why it was the most emotional panel for me. Because I remember I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, am I really brown? You know, I didn't need to go through a process of reflection on how I self-identify or whether other people would perceive me as brown. You know, I wish I could have just been mindful and stayed there and focused on the amazing content of the panel. But that's what ended up happening. It was a catalyst for that. And it was like, well, what do we need to do as a group, maybe, as a blog? What does CP Mutiny need to do in order to enlarge this definition of brown? You know, and how important is that? Because we didn't even think about that. That's not even something that comes up. We just take it for granted that we're brown, too. And that's like one of the first things I'm going to tell my co-bloggers, is that we cannot do that, and that other people are not including us when they conceptualize brown. And I think that is huge. I think it is such a just something that really, really needs to be addressed and fixed, because I was left out. But you know, she handled it well. She said 1,000 apologies, and I thought that was very gracious of her. So, but I agree with you. It can't happen again. You know, it's fine. It's okay. It was the first one. They had 4 months to put it together. I think that they're so wonderfully well-intentioned that this was not any kind of a slight. But that doesn't take away from the emotional response that I had and that it seems like you had.
Yes, and definitely it's like a responsibility now. The squeaky wheel gets oiled. That's just a fact. And I see my place in this in a different way now, that I need to speak about these things. And I don't blog about race issues or how it affects me, but I think I need to, because being in the spot that I'm in, it's a very thin line. I mean, my mother's German and Dutch, so I'm half white and half Asian. So when brown starts talking about white, then I don't feel included on either side. So I'm never fully accepted by the white community because I have the brown descent. And the brown community doesn't fully accept me because I have the white descent. So for me, I definitely have some feelings to sort out. And if I decide to share this, it's a great way to do it through the blog.
I just can't stop thinking about how that one woman said that we're at the beginning of something and we have the chance to remake it and to do it right and to get it right the first time and not correct mistakes or institutionalized issues. And so I totally think you should write about it, because we need to make we need to dictate the terms of this conversation now instead of going back after the fact and trying to patch things. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think if we kind of set the tone now, that's going to be huge. And it's funny you should bring up your background. Well, it's not funny, but I thought similar things. I have a friend who married an African American, and she's Indian, and she has the most beautiful son, and he's half black and half brown, if you want to use those terms. And I just wondered how he would feel if he had been there, because I felt bad. I'm like, he's just not going to, the alienation I felt, plus, you know, whatever they might have been feeling. And I had no idea that you were also, you know, from two different backgrounds. And so it's what one of the things that I was thinking of, and I'm like, it's one of the things that made me sad, because I'm just kind of like, you know, there's cross-pollination in on so many levels between like all of these communities. So you're not just ostracizing or not offending, but you're not just negatively affecting me. You know, Indian people marry black people. Indian people marry white people. White people marry black people, or whatever. There's an entire mixed race contingency that is also being affected by this. And I think as America's demographics change, you're only going to be affecting more people. And only, if anything, the number of people who self-identify as brown is only going to increase because of this kind of demographic shift. So that's why it's all the more crucial that you talk about this, or that Che brings it up and calls them on it, or that they respond favorably and say, we're sorry and we want you to come with us and take us by the hand. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why this is so significant.
I agree, and I just can't wait to go on to sepiamutiny.com and find out who all these great writers are saying wonderful things and moving directions. And so it's awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for speaking to me, and we look forward to having you show up at the Mutiny.
So I'm sitting here with the creator of Bag and Baggage, and I'll let her introduce herself and tell me what she's doing at Blog Her Con and how it's changed her life, if it has.
Hi, Ponzi. I'm Denise Howell. I do write the Bag and Baggage blog at bagandbaggage.com. And I'm involved in a couple of other projects on the web. I do a podcast at IT Conversations. It's called Sound Policy. You can find that at soundpolicy.net. And I contribute over at Courant to the Between Lawyers blog, which is at courant.com/betweenlawyers. And I'm here at Blog Her. I'm doing a whole lot of hallway schmoozing and talking and catching up with people. Not nearly enough visiting the sessions, but I understand somewhat secondhand for most of them that they've been really good. The session that I was involved in was on women who want to fund and build things. So we talked about the state of venture funding and how the landscape on that has changed a bit in the last few years, and how blogging and open source and all of the tools that we have available to us today can actually help you get a business off the ground and funded in ways that you probably couldn't do, say, 5 years ago. So had a lot of interesting discussions about that, and I think people at this conference, more than just about anywhere else, understand that there are unique opportunities out there from their ability to reach people through direct person-to-person communications that can really help a business get off the ground today in ways that you haven't seen before.
So I'm wondering, how has the diversity been for you? Have you had a chance to embrace that? Because I noticed that the rooms are filled with people from 14 years old to like 70, I believe. I've seen some older women, and then all ranges of colors and ethnicities. And on a personal level, I mean, these women are telling me that this has been life-changing. These are the first conferences that they've been to, and this is the first time that they've been able to get in this kind of an environment. And for you, I know you do these certain things often because you're a speaker. And so how is that for you to be a part of that and to be on a panel and see that happening in front of you?
It's really amazing. The group of people that they've pulled together to be at this conference is just outrageously impressive. My hat's off to the organizers for pulling together this group in fairly short notice. I think they just started planning this event about 4 months ago, so they've really done a great job, and I hope that they decide to keep this up and resurrect it next year, because it can only get better and better. You're right, the diversity here is incredible. You find everything from, you know, people who are writing with passion and, you know, not so concerned with monetizing that or making any kind of business about it, but just wanting to connect with other people and learn and share information, and that's wonderful. And then there's a great, strong business component and technology component, people with all kinds of interests, and they can all help each other, and we've been seeing that go on all day long. It's really neat.
And do you have any plans for this evening? Are you going to go together and get together and do the drinking and the gossiping and just the girl thing?
God, I'd really like to. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pull that off. I came up here with my 20-month-old son, who's staying down the road with my grandmother, who's 96 years old. Fortunately, my mom came along to help my grandma out, because I don't think she could keep up with my little guy for a minute. But I just checked in with them by the cell phone a few minutes ago, and apparently he's tearing around the house, has not taken a nap all day, playing in the sprinklers out front, just enjoying the beautiful Santa Clara Valley weather that we're having here today. And so I think I'm probably going to have to go home and settle him down a little bit. But once I get him to bed, maybe I'll be able to sneak out. Yeah.
So that is so cool that you have mom and grandma here. So there's three generations here. And four with your son. Exactly. So tell me about that. How is that? You must all be very close if you're all here together. And what do they think about this? Do they understand blogging? Do they follow your blog? And where are they at in this situation, in this blog world?
Yeah, they think it's pretty fascinating. They know much more about it since I've been involved with it than they ever would. My grandmother, I think, was just born too early. She would have been the world's greatest Moblogger. She loves taking pictures and sharing them with people. And she winds up, you know, pretty much bankrupting herself, making dozens of copies of pictures and sending them out to all the relatives. If only, you know, she were more net savvy, she could much more efficiently do the job that she's done for years with Kodak and Kodak paper. So we show her all this stuff on the web, and she just loves it and loves the fact that she has access to all the pictures that we're always taking of her great-grandchild. And she's a heck of a storyteller, too. So, you know, I 96 years old, I don't really expect her to start taking up blogging anytime soon.
The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.